Next, we'll hear from the internal committee chairs with their respective Judicial Council committee presentations. We'll start with Judge Ken So, chair of PCLC.
Thank you, Chief. The policy committee has met four times since the last council meeting, once in late April, twice in May, and once in June, and we've been taking positions on behalf of the council on 18 separate pieces of legislation. We've also adopted a recommendation on one legislative proposal for Judicial Council sponsorship. At the April meeting, PCLC approved sponsorship of a legislative proposal on disposition and demolition of the old San Diego courthouse. The committee also acted to support AB 581 relating to the State Facilities Renewal Bond Act of 2016 and opposed Senate Bill 695 dealing with a standard of review for writs of habeas corpus. The committee has also taken an opposed unless amended position and funded position on the judicial review provisions of AB 825, which would fundamentally change the process of judicial review of California PUC Commission decisions. The committee also took a no position on the remaining provisions of the measure, which are outside the Judicial Council purview. We are still concerned about the contracting out bill. That bill has passed the Senate and is now winding its way through the assembly. Many of you will be asked to make calls and contact your legislative members. That is still out there. We do have a strategic way of going about this, but we are going to ask for your help because we know and we are afraid that the contracting out bill may have an adverse effect on the local trial court's budgets. Additionally, of course, some of the Judicial Council-sponsored legislation is still going through, including the bill that is near and dear to Judge Weber's heart, the peremptory challenge modification. We're still alive right now, and we're still going to be fighting that. And if there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. And of course, all of PCLC's actions are on the website.
Thank you, Judge So. I don't see any hands raised. Appreciate that report. We'll hear from Justice Miller for Executive and Planning Committee, ENP.
Thank you, Chief. My full report will be posted online, but I wanted to highlight one especially important development over the past few months. Executive and Planning had posted a proposed rule on the charge and makeup of the Accountability and Efficiency Committee in order to comply as quickly as possible with two of the recommendations the state auditor had made in January. The proposed rule was reviewed by Justice Hall's Rules and Projects Committee and then approved and sent out for public comment. However, after reviewing many thoughtful comments, both pro and con about the rule, from literally all levels of the judicial branch, it was very evident and clear we had more work to do. So at the last agenda-setting meeting at our Executive and Planning Committee meeting on June 15th, I announced that we were withdrawing the rule for consideration at this time. Simply put, we needed to go back to the drawing board. The immediate result of this action is that we will not meet, unfortunately, our internally set goal of responding to two of the auditor's recommendations by early July. On one hand, this is unfortunate because we are committed to fulfilling the state auditor's recommendations as quickly as possible. On the other hand, though, the comments helped me to recognize that we need to continue our deliberative process about any future recommendations with regards to those audit concerns. So let me take just a moment to review how we came to this conclusion. The chief appointed an audit working group on January 7th, on the exact same day the auditor submitted her report. And here are two of the state auditor's recommendations. First, quote, to ensure that it spends funds appropriately, the Judicial Council should develop and implement controls to govern how its staff can spend judicial branch funds. These controls should include specific definitions of local assistance and support expenditures, written fiscal policies and procedures as the rules of court require, and a review process. And second, The Judicial Council should develop rules of court that create a separate advisory body or amend the current advisory committee's responsibilities and composition that reports directly to the Judicial Council to review the Judicial Council's state operations and local assistance expenditures in detail to ensure they are justified and prudent. This advisory body should be composed of subject matter experts with experience in public and judicial branch finance. End of quote. The Audit Working Group assigned these two recommendations in February to Administrative Director Martin Hoschino and jointly to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee chaired by Judge Lori Earle. Judge Earle's committee immediately began studying the issue. At the same time, discussions were ongoing about the Financial Accountability and Efficiency Committee and the utility of the committee in its current form and whether or not possible changes should be made to its scope and composition. These discussions and evaluations eventually converged and were consolidated in the form of the proposed rule change. The proposed rule change was the product of many, many discussions, and I quote many, and went through many edits to capture and balance different concerns and to comply with the state auditor's recommendations. It was clear, though, from the 12 thoughtful comments we received that the proposed rule had various deficiencies and that we needed to rethink our approach to these particular recommendations of the auditor. And now, after hearing the administrative director's report and seeing how he is bringing in technical assistance to review fiscal practices of the agency, I'm encouraged that the further insights he gathers, along with the way we will also provide some guidance along the way, this will help us and provide some additional guidance to us as to how we should respond to these two recommendations of the auditor. So we are ongoing in this process, Chief. Thank you, and this concludes my report.
Thank you, Justice Miller. We'll hear next from Justice Harry Hull from Rules and Projects.
Yes, good morning, Chief. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. The Rules and Projects Committee has met three times and has communicated by electronic mail on three matters since the April 17th Judicial Council meeting. On May the 8th, the Rules and Projects Committee met by telephone to consider a rules proposal to circulate for comment. The Rules and Projects Committee approved circulation on a special cycle following circulation and further review by the proponent committee and the Rules and Projects Committee. This proposal is expected to be or to come before the Council at the August business meeting. On May the 12th, the Rules and Projects Committee acted by electronic mail to consider two proposals, one to make technical corrections to two forms, which corrections were made necessary by statutory changes, and the other a rule proposal to circulate on a special cycle. The Rules and Projects Committee recommends approval of the technical change proposal, which is item 2, A2 on today's consent agenda, and the Rules and Projects Committee approved circulation, as Justice Miller noted, of a proposal to amend Rule 10.83, California Rules of Court. Again, that action by the Rules and Projects Committee was on May the 12th, and as you've heard, there have been additional developments on that rule in the meantime. On May the 21st, the Rules and Projects Committee met by telephone in a meeting that was closed under Rule 10.75, Subdivision D2, for discussion of matters involving potential litigation. The Rules and Projects Committee and the Executive and Planning Committee met by telephone in a joint meeting on June 1st. The Rules and Projects Committee considered new Rule 4.105 regarding appearance without a deposit of bail in traffic infraction cases, which was developed on an urgent basis, as we're all aware. The Rules and Projects Committee recommended approval of this proposal, and again, as we all recall, and as the Chief Justice noted, that rule was adopted on June the 8th. The rule was effective upon adoption. However, the provision requiring courts to implement notice requirements for instructions to the public about bail for traffic infractions, including website information, courtesy notices, and similar materials, must be implemented. Soon as reasonably practicable, but in no event later than September 15th of this year. On June the 15th, the Rules and Projects Committee, acting by electronic mail, considered the requests of the Traffic and Criminal Law Advisory Committees to amend their annual agendas to add items that the Rules and Projects Committee recommended at the June 8th council meeting in conjunction with adoption of the new Rule 4.105. Those items consist of the following. Number one, revising traffic forms as necessary. Two, providing for appearances at arraignment and trial without the deposit of bail in non-traffic infraction cases. And three, considering rule, form, or other recommendations necessary to promote access to justice in all infraction cases, including recommendations related to post-conviction proceedings or after the defendant has previously failed to appear or pay. The Rules and Projects Committee at that time approved the Traffic Advisory Committee's and Criminal Law Advisory Committee's request to amend their annual agenda in those three regards. But on June 17th, the Rules and Projects Committee acted by electronic mail to consider revisions to a traffic form for payment of bail in installments to make it consistent with newly adopted Rule 4.105 and revisions to traffic and criminal law notice to appear forms, an amendment of Rule 4.103. The Rules and Projects Committee recommends approval of these proposals, which are items A4 and A5 on today's consent agenda. Chief, that concludes the Rules and Project Committee report. I would be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Justice Hull. Next, we'll hear from Judge James Herman on the Technology Committee.
Thank you, Chief. Since the last Judicial Council meeting, the Technology Committee has had two meetings. One was telephonic on May 11th, and then we had an in-person meeting yesterday, and I'll provide a little bit later in my report the detail of those committee meetings and the work that we did. I would like to update the council on the rule of court that's in progress in order to align the governance structure of CTAC, the Court Technology Advisory Committee, with the JCTC. In May, Judge Dave DiAlba, our vice chair, presented to RUPRO the proposed rule, and RUPRO then approved the proposal to amend Rules 10.16, the Judicial Council Technology Committee rule, as well as 10.53, the Court Technology Advisory Committee rule. The invitation to comment period began on May 8th. It was originally to close on June 19th. Some stakeholders indicated that they wanted further input, so we extended that out until July 6th. So that comment period is not closed, although we've got some valuable input from Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee regarding tying state-level technology projects to available funding. I think the council is already aware that the transition would change the name of CTAC to the Information Technology Advisory Committee and also update roles and responsibilities of both the Advisory Committee and the JCTC. Our committee will review the comments and proposals at our July meeting with the goal of presenting the rule to the council at its August meeting, so it may go into effect September 2015. Our May 11th JCTC meeting, the committee received updates on from Court Technology Advisory Committee, including their work streams in progress, sustained justice, and we received also updates on sustained justice edition case management funding that is on those sustained courts that are supported by the Tech Center on V3 case management funding, on technology budget change proposals, and on the Judicial Council's information technology functions, as well as the California Law Enforcement Telecommunications System Program. At our meeting yesterday, the in-person meeting, the committee received updates again on SJE-hosted courts and the B3 courts relating to the next steps for assisting those courts in replacing their case management systems, the proposed update to the rule of court, and also a report from CTAC, and then a further exploration of technology BCPs, including lessons learned from the LAN-WAN BCP. Council probably knows we've had, and as director Shino has already reported, 54 of the 58 courts were supported at the state level in terms of telecommunications through LAN-WAN, and we've added a year or so ago an additional four courts, and three of those four courts are our largest courts. So, substantial amount of expense in terms of adding those courts. that expense would come out of the Information and Modernization Fund. So by getting this BCP passed through the legislature, through the governor, and through the budget process, we've been able to take additional pressure off of the IMF. So I want to congratulate Martin Nishino. I want to congratulate Kurt Soderlund and his staff for really a very able job in getting this BC passed. It's very, very important. We approved a number of BCPs in principle to be placeholders in the September cycle, including those related to data security, those related to document management systems for the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals, as well as BCPs relating to V3 and the sustained courts supported by the Tech Center, rotating those or pivoting those courts off of their current V3 systems and replacing them with systems from other vendors. And just to give some detail on where we've been over the last since the last meeting relative to the sustained justice edition courts that are hosted in the V3 courts on their glide path off of state funding. Over the last 2 months, IT staff and I have met with the sustained justice edition courts 3 times to provide answers to contract and budget-related information that has been requested by those courts, as well as to discuss the service level reductions which will be required if the trial court budget advisory committee's recommendation, which will come later this afternoon, I think it's the last item on our agenda, if that's approved to freeze the fiscal year, to freeze budgeting to the 1516, to freeze funding for 1516 at the 1415 level. Rick Feldstein has been really a lead on this, and I want to thank him for all of his good work. He's kind of got wears 3 hats in the process. He's on the trial court fund balances and V3/sustain IT working group. He's on the trial court budget advisory committee, and he's also participates in the trial court PJ advisory committee, SEAC joint technology subcommittee meetings, and he's kind of also, of course, on JCTC. So with those 3 hats, he's kind of been the pivot person in terms of the good work and moving forward as far as moving those courts off of support for V3 and the Tech Center supported sustained courts. Part of the process has been additional surveys of those courts to try to get a tight idea on what the costs would be in order for the courts to move off of their existing systems. And during the course of the last couple of months, I've continued to receive updates from JCC staff on the court technology, the Tech Center contract negotiations, which Director Nishino also spoke about, which also were very important. It's really a terrific result to get that reduction, which takes additional pressure off of trial court trust, general funding, and the IMF fund. So, Chief, that's my report. And if anyone has any questions, I'd certainly be glad to answer.
Thank you, Judge Herman. I see no hands raised.